Tim Brown was a professional footballer in his native New Zealand, and even represented his country at a World Cup, before he decided to change tack completely. Finishing his sports career, he set out to establish a new shoe brand with sustainability at its heart. And it's a journey that took him first to London and then on to San Francisco. Allbirds is the brand he launched in San Fran back in 2015, along with co-founder Joey Zwillinger. Earlier this year, the company sold its 1 millionth pair of shoes. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Matt Alagaya. Today, Tim Brown is here to talk us through how he came up with the idea for Allbirds and to explain how he and his co-founder Joey are looking to build the brand worldwide.
So I was back in New Zealand. I had about a decade-long professional sporting career playing soccer in the A-League. Was fortunate enough to go to the World Cup in 2010 with New Zealand, which was a highlight. And this idea was born when I was playing sport. I was sponsored by one of the major sportswear companies that shall not be named, and used to get lots of free gear. And it changed all the time, seemingly for no reason. It was brightly coloured. It had logos all over it. And so, you know, the very first insight that gave birth to what is now, you know, now Allbirds was a design one, and it was based on simplicity. And the idea that in footwear, there was an opportunity to do something much, much less than everyone else was doing and create, you know, a very, very simple silhouette, the simplest thing that we could possibly make. And that's what we set out to do.
And when you looked at those trainers when you were a professional footballer, was there a sustainability question in your mind even then? Were you thinking, you know, they're sending me all these new things every year. Surely these things could be a bit more sustainable.
No, to be honest, no. It changed. So I visited my first ever footwear factory while I was still playing. I, you know, literally found one on the internet and set out to try and sort of realize this vision for this simple trainer. And walked into an industry that I knew very little about. I'd worn shoes. I'd never thought about how they were made and realized it was a category that was very, very old-fashioned, relied heavily on human labor, hadn't really changed for 100 years, and was very, very one-dimensional in the materials that it used, largely relying on synthetics and not very nice leathers. So it was sort of the second big kind of light bulb moment that there was an opportunity to rethink what shoes were made out of. And that led us to initially wool and ultimately eucalyptus and over time to the larger purpose of the brand.
At what stage did it become more than just an idea that you were kind of curious about? At what stage did it become something that you thought, I'm actually going to invest my time and effort in this?
It took place. It was a curiosity project while I was still playing. And after I went to the World Cup, I realized my football career was never going to get any better than that. And retired and fulfilled a long-standing dream to come back to London, where I was born, to go to graduate school and had another opportunity, I think, to spend some time thinking about the business in a lot more detail. It had started off really about a product problem and became over time through business school a business case. And I was fortunate enough through that period to meet through my now wife, my co-founder, Joey, who has a background in renewable materials, had focused his career on sustainability and was fundamentally of the belief that we were on the cusp of a sort of a revolution in how things were made. And that kicked off, I think, the sort of next chapter of this.
Just describe for us that first meeting with Joey, because, you know, obviously he's now the co-founder. He's mm-hmm. brought a lot to the business. But what was that first meeting like? Was it a kind of instant connection or did it take a bit longer?
We'd been friends before. So our wives were roommates in college on the East Coast of America and knew each other well. We'd seen each other at weddings before and socially had been friendly with no sense that we might go into business together. And my wife, I think, had seen me fumbling around with the early stages of kicking this off and suggested that I chat with Joey. And famously, at least for us, flew out from London, where we were living at the time, to San Francisco, where he was based, spent 3 days walking the hills there discussing this sort of early traction that we had with the idea and the future vision for it, and decided quite quickly that it was the right time for us to work together on this, and more importantly, that it was the right type of partnership, that we had complementary skills to sort of attack this idea. And the idea itself was a little bit about shoes, but a lot about this larger sense of a revolution in sustainable manufacturing and a belief that we could contribute to that in a positive way.
So is that when you moved then to San Francisco, you kind of upped sticks again?
And, I came back after those 3 days and I said to my wife, who was thoroughly enjoying being in London, that there was a big opportunity to do this with Joey and that San Francisco was the right place for us to do that. And as a New Zealander, I was a little bit excited about the idea of being closer to home too. So it ticked a bunch of boxes, and very, very quickly we moved there and we raised some money around the idea for the first time, a couple of $1 million in venture funding led by, you know, some really fantastic investors, hired our first sort of team members and prepared for, you know, really the relaunch, if you will, of the brand and the product with the name Allbirds, and prepared for the 1st of March 2016. So we're probably late 2015 at this point.
I mean, I'm guessing when you were going around to investors and things, you already had products to show them. You'd already been manufacturing the shoes.
Sure, yeah. I'd come out of sport with a little bit of an idea of how shoes were made, and a fabric that had been created, a woolen textile that had been created for the first time to make shoes out of wool, which was the early idea. And I'd actually launched it in early 2014 as a Kickstarter campaign, and had some really great success out of the gate that I think had proved the possibility or the connection with the consumer in this product, which was a really great experiment. But it was now the sort of time to do things properly, and we raised money around the idea that you know, we wanted to partner with the best people in the world to make the product, that we wanted to truly build a brand and a story around the woolen shoes initially, but also a larger idea of different materials and support of comfort, which was really the pillar of the brand, and we set out to do that.
Let's just focus again on San Francisco as a location, mm-hmm. because it's obviously been a very good move in many ways, because mm-hmm. you know, you found a real market there. Mm-hmm. You are also seen, I guess, as a brand as a bit of a darling of Silicon Valley, and does that then become a bubble that's quite difficult to break out of? Have you found that?
You know, it hasn't been. I think San Francisco is a place where a lot of different ideas are being born at the moment, transformational ideas. So it's certainly, you know, as an entrepreneur and someone that was building a business, that I don't think there's anywhere better in the world to be. There was the sense that we were tackling a very difficult problem, a very complicated category, and people loved that idea. They were quick to embrace the sort of the spirit that Allbirds represented out of the gate. But I think what's been so great about the adoption of our brand has been how broad that has been. Our biggest market is New York. We've been sold in really every city across America. We launched in America and New Zealand. The adoption in New Zealand has been fantastic. It's been young and old, the creative class, but all sorts of different people have adopted the story and this idea of a brand that stands for something more. So, but San Francisco, I think, was the perfect place for us to start.
It's funny, you're going into this industry that's dominated by a couple of huge players. I mean, you know, we all know that footwear is a huge market, but it's dominated by big players. How did you kind of build the brand in that space? What was the sort of the strategy for, I guess, differentiating yourself from those bigger players?
Yeah, I think the way that we looked at the footwear market in America alone is, you know, $85 billion market. Americans buy about 7 or 8 pairs of shoes a year each on average, and I think it's the same, if not a little bit higher, in the UK. So enormous market. And we looked at it really as sort of 3 buckets. There was performance, of which some of those brands that you've mentioned do, you know, make great products, casual in the middle, and then fashion. And we saw the opportunity in this casual space to reinvent these classic silhouettes with a different type of business model focused on a direct-to-consumer relationship. So we sold our shoes online only and through our own retail, which is an emerging channel for us. And we were focused really deeply on that market and building a brand around movement, around thoughtful use of materials, and around comfort. And that's what we tried to do a couple of things really, really well. And we launched on the 1st of March 2016 with one shoe. And traditionally in footwear, that's not how you do it. You have a range. It changes all the time. And we sold it online only. And I think this, you know, we've been successful, I think, because of that focus and being clear as much about what we're not going to do as to what we actually are.
Interesting. And on the kind of building the brand, I guess, getting the word out there, you obviously used celebrity endorsements quite a lot and maybe shied away, I guess, a bit from traditional forms of advertising.
We barely did. In the first week, Time magazine called our shoes the most comfortable in the world, and word of mouth largely fueled our really special growth through that period. The celebrity engagement found us rather than something that we really went looking for. And it was just really, really special. We started with, you know, I think there was 5 people working with us, and we now have a team of approaching 150 people. And so really, really exciting. People have gravitated towards the idea of simplicity, of design, of comfort, and of the use of sustainable materials, and a brand that's thinking deeply about how the product is made.
Let's focus on the design perspective. You mentioned there that, you know, you were going for simplicity the whole time. Did you find that the sort of footwear market outside of Allbirds was kind of a bit too garish, a bit too or in your face with branding and lots of bright colours?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the assumption sometimes with innovation is it's about adding stuff. I think, you know, the opportunity we saw to do something differently was about taking things away. And it was, you know, the challenge we set ourselves out of the gate was, if you were going to make one trainer or sneaker, or what would it look like? And, you know, internally that label is the right amount of nothing. And it was about taking stuff away, stripping things back to its purest form. And again, simple is not easy. It's actually a lot harder. And we went through hundreds and hundreds of prototypes before we landed on the sort of the silhouette that became, you know, the Wool Runner, which was our first product. And that has resonated, I think, by maybe whispering when everyone else before it was screaming.
Looking at your life and your career, have you found it difficult making that transition into a business career? I mean, obviously now, 4 years on, you're a very experienced entrepreneur, but in those early days, you know, you'd had a career in football, you had done the graduate school, but this was your first sort of attempt at starting a business. Did you find it a real difficult transition, or has it kind of, I don't know, come naturally? And how much has Joey had to do with that?
Oh, Joey's had an enormous amount. And I think that the first thing I would sort of say to people that are imagining kicking off a business is find someone great to do that with, to share that journey with, because it's a very, very hard one. And I think very fortunately, Joey has, you know, complementary set of skills operationally, his knowledge of materials, and combined with my sense of product and design, maybe, you know, has been really helpful to tackling this, you know, quite complicated challenge of kicking something off. There is a lot of similarities between sport and professional sport and entrepreneurship. It's incredibly competitive. It's about winning and losing. And it's about, you know, coming back for more when, you know, when people tell you, as they often will do, and certainly did for me for a long time, that your idea is not a very good one, and continuing to sort of commit to improve and to iterate until you get something that works, that something that's successful. You know, so I think there's parallels there. I think equally, you know, Joey and I knew nothing about shoes. We came in cold to a very, very old-fashioned category, and I think we're powered by that naivety in some ways. We're able to ask really, really simple questions and found some things that I think had been overlooked, maybe for their obviousness. And so, you know, a combination of things really helped by our inexperience to sort of go and do this. But, you know, I think we had the courage to stick to our convictions too. Right up until launch, the idea of one shoe was a great one, and then there was a lot of doubt, and a lot of people said, hey, you know, you have to conform here and do things a little bit more traditionally. And we had the courage to stick with our point of view, and I think, you know, that ability to sort of focus has been our best friend, I think.
And how have you kind of divided up the work, as so to speak, from the beginning? I mean, were you always more on the design side, and was he much more on the operational side?
Yeah, so we run the business as co-CEOs, which is a little bit of an unusual structure, although it's gaining, I think, popularity, because yeah. I think, you know, done well, I think it can take you further. I run the product and brand side of things, and then Joey does operations and technology and finance, and we meet in the middle to manage people, or the HR function within the business. And it's worked really, really well for us, and incredibly proud of that partnership. But the ability to do it with someone, I think, has been critical, because it is hard. And every single day you'll face questions that you don't have answers to, and the ability to sort of have someone to sort of make that fun and give you perspective on the journey that you're going through has been helpful. And we're now managing a team that's growing rapidly, transitioning from, you know, doing a lot of the things ourselves, literally, you know, sanding tables and painting walls, to now sort of overseeing a very, very high horsepower team to tackle the expansion of the brand in retail, and now into international markets as we prepare to open in the UK. So, but it's just learning something new every day, and very, very fortunate to have him as a partner.
When we talk about scaling up a business and having to hand tasks over to other people that you've been doing for months and months, I know for a lot of entrepreneurs that can be actually really tough. You know, they've been used to being across the entire business, and it's about then kind of trusting people to do it. Did you find that hard as well? I mean, handing things over to your team members?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're holding on to this thing so tight for all the best reasons. But very quickly, if you're doing it the right way, you realize that there's a few things you do really well and a bunch of things that you don't, and you need to get a lot of help. And from the beginning, that's been our approach. We've hired really, really, really smart people that could do the job 10 times better than we ever could, and then just sort of learnt from them. And I think if you take that type of mindset, you're probably going to be okay. And you know, the team we've assembled to attack this are largely people that are outside of the footwear industry, with a couple of notable exceptions. And you know, I think we're tackling a very, very meaningful challenge. And it's just been phenomenal to see the sort of team come together, and really feel fortunate to be a part of it.
And just finally on that management side of things, you mentioned that you're both co-CEOs, which is a sort of interesting model. And you said that was going to be, you know, it's going to become a bit more prevalent in the industry. Is that just a kind of flattening out of the structure? Like, you know, we've kind of seen that people are stripping away levels of management just because it gets in the way, kind of thing. Do you feel like having two CEOs balances that as well?
I think what it sort of says is there's no one person making the decision. That it's about, you know, certainly, you know, the way that Joey and I have set this up, it's about the best idea winning. It's about a culture of debate and discussion, the sense of sort of a singular point of control and top down sort of decision making has been completely upended. And I think the co-CEO model is one sort of, you know, response to a different way of doing things. It's not the only one. It's not always going to be the right thing, but for us, I think it's been really, really important. It's allowed us, I think, to sort of move faster and do more things, because we've got two different sort of ways of looking at things leading the organization. So
let's look at branding now. You worked with Red Antler on the branding of the company. Just talk us through what that process was like. I mean, Red Antler are famous for having done, you know, well, you guys, but also Casper and a lot of kind of startup D2C brands. What was it like sort of working with them?
It's really helpful, I think, in the early stages of forming a brand. You have 1,000 things that you want to do, and 1,000 things that you love about your product and your story and the opportunity. And it's really, really helpful to have an external sort of voice come in and sort of say, hey, you know, it's great that you're doing all these things. It's great that these are all the attributes of the product, but here are the couple of things, just based on what you've been telling us, that you really need to focus on. And that third party perspective was really, really helpful for us in the early stages of sort of defining exactly what Allbirds was. And I think it's allowed us to focus, you know, our message and our story in a really singular way. And I think when you're close to something, you know, there's the tendency to want to tell people all the things that are great about it. And the consumer actually really wants to hear the one or possibly two things that make your product and your story great. And, you know, we had a bunch of help from different people that guided us towards this sort of this clarity and the simplicity that we have now. But it was hard fought. It takes a long time. And they were one of several people, you know, several groups that helped us.
And just how many iterations of the brand did you go through with Red Antler?
You know, quite early on, we latched on to the name Allbirds, which was a nod to New Zealand, maybe where the idea was born. You know, that when people first showed up in New Zealand, there was nothing there but birds. So it was a nod to the idea of treating more lightly in the way that we make products and being thoughtful about the environment and in the way that we make stuff. And then from there, I think the richness of the story was there. We'd been trying to make this product for years in different forms. We'd innovated and made a woolen material to make shoes out of wool for the first time before. We'd been through a Kickstarter campaign and taken this product to market. So, you know, I think a lot of people come and talk to us now about brands and starting things. And oftentimes the best thing to do is just to start and to throw something out into the world. And very fortunately, when we went to, you know, to build this brand, we'd been working on it for a number of years already in terms of trying to make the product. So we came not starting from zero.
I mean, when you look at, I guess, particularly your sector, brands are so important and branding is so important. Do you find that actually you sometimes have to start with the brand and work backwards and say, okay, these are the things we need to be communicating. This is what the brand needs to say.
I think it's really about starting with the problem that you're solving. It's starting with the product that you hope to make, or the product or service that you have to make or hope to make or have made. And really it's about telling that story really authentically. And from the beginning, this story, we never set out to build a global brand. We set out to solve a design problem initially, and then a material problem, and then ultimately a sustainability problem. And that journey, you know, the brand is really a sort of a reflection of that story, and it's true and it's real, and I think it's the best starting point for any sort of brand is to just focus on the truth.
And let's look at scale now. You mentioned that you have 150-ish people in San Francisco. I think I'm right in saying you sold your 1 millionth pair of shoes earlier this year as well.
around our second birthday, which is March of this year, just as we prepared to launch our second material, which was a eucalyptus fiber invention, we made that announcement. We've been really careful not to share really anything about the performance of the business, because I just don't think that it's the way that we've sort of measured success. But the millionth pair felt like a sort of a seminal moment and something to talk about and celebrate as we prepared to try and do it again with a different material. And there was a great reaction to that. And I think we've just had this wonderful support from the beginning from people, and it just shows no signs of abating, and it's been a really, really special thing.
So you've obviously taken on some more funding. That was in September last year. Was that designed to expand internationally? Was that the big next frontier?
From the beginning, we've been really frugal in the way that we've run things, and raised an initial seed amount of money and then a couple of growth rounds of funding to take the total funding to about $27 million, always in support of growth and, you know, when we've needed to rather than because we had to. And in our particular case, there's sort of three big levers that we're using that money to sort of grow and evolve the business. One is retail. So we've got a store in San Francisco and Soho and New York that have been really successful, and I see a big opportunity to expand that presence, and really excited by the performance there. I think international, we out of the gate it was America and New Zealand only, but we've added Australia and Canada, and then just continuing to innovate around product and materials. And about 2 months ago, we, on the back of our wool and our eucalyptus tree innovation, we added our third big material, which was a sugarcane-based EVA. EVA is one of the most commonly used materials in footwear, and we found a way to take the petrol out effectively and make it with sugarcane in partnership with one of the largest green energy companies in the world based in Brazil. So it was a big, big moment, and another sort of example of how we're continuing to get better and find new ways to bring sustainable materials into our products.
Just on the material side, do you have a big lab full of R&D people, or is it generally a bit outsourced and then people come to you with a material and then you work on it together with them?
Yeah, more the latter. We've got some really, really smart people in our team that are focused on materials and finding new ways to do things, but we're not creating those things. They largely exist. We as a brand become a conduit to take them to market in different products focused on the idea of comfort. We're able to do that because we have this direct-to-consumer business model that gives us the ability to invest in sustainable materials and to move faster. We're not releasing product on a wholesale calendar. We're releasing them when they're right. So we're able to, as we find new and better ways to do things, better materials, more sustainable materials, we're able to plug those into our products on a sort of a case-by-case basis, on a rolling basis. And that business model and that flexibility and that nimbleness is, a big part of our point of difference too.
Do you find you need to tweak your brand, tweak your communications? Are the customers in those markets different? Do you need to think about that?
It's largely the same message, but it's always slightly different, whether it be a sense of humor or a spelling. It's at the margins, but largely we're doing the same thing. And the idea of a new emerging consumer, a young consumer that's starting to demand the provenance of the things that they wear and buy is a universal thing we're finding.
Let's just have a look at, I guess, the way that brands seem to be developing now. They start online as direct consumer, but then they need a store at some point. You need to have this omni-channel model eventually. Do you think it would be possible to launch Allbirds today, 4 years down the line, and still have the same success? Because I speak to a lot of direct consumer brands and they say, actually, it's much more difficult now to get the word out there if you're just online. And they're finding it very difficult. Customer acquisition on Facebook and Google is incredibly expensive. All of these things are slightly more difficult than they were maybe a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting. In some ways, the barriers have never been lower to starting a business online and building a website and selling something. And in some ways, it's never been more competitive. It's, at the end of the day, I think it's about making a product that truly solves a consumer problem and having something that people are willing to tell their friends about. And if you don't have that, then I think it becomes very, very hard and very, very expensive. I think the retail thing is something that we've always imagined would be part of our story from the beginning. At the end of the day, people want to try shoes on, and it's really, really important to give them that experience. And sometimes there's the misconception that direct-to-consumer is online only. It's about a direct relationship with your community or with your customer and whatever form that takes. What we've sort of seen is in San Francisco and New York is that It's been a, you know, four-wall contribution to our business, but also a kind of a an expression of the brand, and people are interested to come and touch and feel and learn as much as sort of transact. So I mean, I think that's been an often told story. You know, I think a lot of the sort of the narrative around retail being dead, I think, is wrong. I think just bad retail has struggled, but good retail, I think, has great demand, and we see an enormous future for that channel for Allbirds.
And do you see your stores as more kind of showrooms for the brand, where people can come in and learn, and then actually the transaction will happen maybe later online on their smartphone?
All of the above. I think it's an opportunity to come in and buy the shoes and to try them on, which is something that people want to do and feel, you know, slightly less comfortable doing online. It's all of the above, and I think we're still learning how to do that really, really well. But fundamentally, being a great retailer is the first challenge. You know, we want that experience to, you know, you'd be able to come in to try the shoes, to have the shoes available that you want, and then to walk out of the store with them. And then beyond that, there's a bunch of other opportunities once you have that person in the store to teach them about some of the things you stand for. And you know, I think that you know, when people come in, they'll see that we've thought really deeply about that.
When we look forwards, how close are you to accomplishing, I guess, the first ambition of Allbirds? I mean, do you look at the brand now and say, we're nearly there, or have you've done one-tenth of what you wanted to do?
It's really interesting when you look at the fashion industry broadly, and more specifically footwear. There's sort of 20-odd billion pairs of shoes made each year. It's an enormous category that we think, you know, has largely paid lip service to the idea of sustainability, and we're still tiny in comparison to the scale of this industry, and there's a long, long way to go. What was so neat about this most recent material, the sugarcane sweet foam partnership, was that we made that available to the whole industry, so we were able to take that to market. But it was something that that we made publicly shared with everyone, with a view that we tackle this problem only when we do it together. So there's a lot more work to be done. And while we've made some really positive strides in 3 years, there's a bunch of things that we could be doing better too.
And I'm afraid that's all we have time for on today's show. Thank you very much to Tim Brown for coming in and sharing the story of Allbirds. This show is produced by Daniel Bache and mixed and edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Matt Alagaya. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.